Welcome to the Penny and Pops podcast. He's Spencer Penny Strode. I'm Adam Pops Papa Giorgio. The Magic lost game two, 96-86 in Cleveland on Monday night. The Cavs, they hold a 2-0 series lead. Magic fans, it's not the end of the world, I promise. I know some of you seem a little dejected out on social media. It's okay. Trust me, it'll be fine. Both losses, though, had similar problems, you know, for the Magic. Bad first quarter starts, bad three-point shooting, not good enough scoring contributions, some shaky coaching player rotation choices, our guards leaving our bigs hanging out to dry defending the paint, and not being able to score enough in the paint or rebound at times. And yet both games, we still could have won. That's the bright side. Donovan Mitchell and Jared Allen, they've been outstanding. You just got to give them a golf clap of respect. Like, they've been kicking our ass these first two games. On top of all of this, you know, we have Cavs fans on social media and also inside, was it Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, it's called now, calling the Wagner brothers Nazis. And in no world is that okay or acceptable to do. Even one Cleveland fan got kicked out for spewing shit in Franz's face. But it's more folks than that doing the same thing towards the Wagner brothers, be it at the games or online. And it's not cool and it's not acceptable. And basketball karma is going to come hard for Cleveland. It may or may not be us that delivers it, but it's going to hit something fierce. We're back home in Orlando with two full days off to prepare for a massive Game 3 Thursday night. And honestly, this series starts now with us taking care of our home floor. Our team's going to need loud and energetic support from everybody here in town. Let's go.
Hardaway, straight down the lane, the power jam. Point guard on a 7-6 guy.
Here's Lewis turning and he shoots.
Yes! With four and 1 second.
Here's Turkaloo for the win.
All right, Penny, the Magic are back home after losing game two Monday night in Cleveland, 96-86. We're down 0-2 and just have some things to figure out before game three at Kia Center Thursday night. Before we get to the games, Jamal Mosley was officially named an NBA Coach of the Year finalist, along with Dagnall and Finch. I think Mosley's going to finish second in the voting. Penny, what do you think?
It was funny, they put, if you were watching the Bally broadcast last night, they put the headshots up of the three finalists. And I asked my girlfriend, who's not a basketball fan, but a budding enthusiast now, I go, just based on the headshots, who do you think will win? She said Chris Finch, because he looks like the prototypical old white guy who, you know, gets accolades for not doing much. But I think Dagnall's going to win. I think Finch is in second, and I think Mosley is in third. But it's nice to see that recognition, and obviously him in the top three.
Yeah, fair enough. I feel like this is like the 20th time we're talking about this, but the Orlando City Council on Monday afternoon gave its approval for the Magic to begin construction of the very, very long-awaited entertainment complex that will be across the street north of Kia Center, across the street east of the Magic's current training center, and across the street west of I-4. The hotel, live music, retail, and office space should be completed by the end of 2026, and the apartments completed by early 2027. Construction's to begin in late 2024. It helps that this project should coincide with the city's I-4 beautification project, which that does not look nearly as promising as it once did. But it's still going to happen. The Magic need to get this entertainment complex project going if they want another shot anytime soon at another All-Star game, because the next one up for grabs is 2028, I believe. So got to get on it. And look, the city in general needs to get its act together with Church Street, Orange Avenue, Central. And I mean, it's nice that they're focusing on Lake Eola and helping that out, but it's got to be more than that, because downtown as a whole really, really needs to get it going. This Magic project, it's going to include 260 hotel rooms, 270 multifamily residential units, a live entertainment venue with 3,500 person capacity, office space, dining and shopping spots, an 1,140 space parking garage, and a 1.5 acre multi-purpose outdoor urban living green space, whatever that means. It is supposed to generate 5,200 construction jobs and then 3,400 full-time jobs when the project is done. It's listed as now a $500 million project. You know, a while back it was $400 million, but, you know, in a decade, it's going to end up being more than $500 million probably. But the expected annual economic output is $362 million, which I'd like to know how they got to that figure. But, I mean, that sounds like a slam dunk if you base it off that number. The Magic are receiving incentives. The incentives include up to $40 million in income tax rebates. So, I mean, the Magic are basically paying the vast majority of this project, at least. So, yeah, Penny, what do we think? What do we think of this project? It sounds like this is definitely happening. Like, even no matter how many like times Alex Martins has said something and it's not happened, like this one definitely seems to finally be it. Like, this is happening this year.
Yeah. I mean, for a long time, it's been, you know, barren ground and vacant land in that area. So something needs to happen. And this is the best, I guess, approach outside of a casino, which wasn't in the cards. So
that was on the table for a while. Yeah.
when Amway Center opened as Amway Center, yeah. You know, there was bar and restaurant and living space
and businesses, and kind of, yes,
and thriving businesses directly across the street. And those fizzled out pretty much within a year, even before there was talk of, you know, you kind of forcing people out and converting that the ownership of that land. So,
yeah,
obviously the Magic being good will help, but downtown as a whole, and specifically Kia Center, and in that, you know, real close proximity, like there has to be something more than just hoping people come down for events to then patronize those businesses. And if there's more living residential there, maybe that helps. I'm not smart enough to know, but you know, you look around the league, there's a lot of great kind of downtown core arenas that have those spaces sprawling around it where people tend to congregate.
Yes.
Not just good for the economy, we think, but also for, you know, the environment and the atmosphere of all the events too. So hopefully it comes to fruition after all this time.
Yep. Well said. Yeah, look, this isn't the first time the city has approved this project. It's just because the plans have changed so much. This had to get approval again, and it did. So looking forward to shovels being in the dirt finally, but all right, really quickly, we also had the NBA draft tiebreakers occur. Orlando finished third in its 14 tiebreaker situation. The Magic are going to draft 18th behind Philly and the Lakers, but ahead of the Pacers. So the Lakers, they might convey their 17th pick to New Orleans. The Pacers are definitely conveying their 19th pick to Toronto. I'm not worrying about draft stuff right now, but I'm just bringing that up. Any thoughts on the 18th pick, though? Or
We'll worry about that 2+ games from now.
Yeah, I'm already going to say Magic are going to draft either Bobby Clinton or the Da Silva German kid. That's what I'm throwing out right now. But all right, game two, Monday night. So everyone was healthy for us. I was seeing some folks say that the Magic had to win game two. No, we did not have to win this game too. Cleveland had to win this game. The pressure was on them. Obviously, from a Magic perspective, you want to win and come back home 1-1, but it wasn't necessary. You did want to see us play better offensively. That needed to happen. Technically, we did, barely, but you know, not by much. But, I mean, we were slightly better, so we are kind of heading in the right direction a little bit there. But we did have the same starting five for both teams was on the floor. Bally Sports caused local Magic fans a lot of pain again, because instead of having it on the usual Bally Sports channel, that channel was given off like an alt 12 error. So you had to either use like their sketchy app and then log in with like your TV provider to watch it, like I did, or a lot of Magic fans were just scrambling to just find ways to watch it because some people were just running into different unique problems. And I guess like some YouTube TV folks were getting blackout errors. It was a mess. And I think late in the first period, like Bally figured it out, but a lot of folks are ready for them to just lose these broadcasting rights. And I don't know, Penny, were you scrambling or any issues with you for watching this game or?
Yeah, I ally ended up watching on the Bally Sports app, which is prone to some issues, but thankfully didn't have any, but wasn't trying to watch on cable for this one, so didn't run into the alt channel madness. But it's always tough, like especially when like they're starting closer to the start time, right? Like so 7:08 instead of 7:15, and then you're trying to get everything on so you don't turn it on and find the magic down 6-0 already.
So the game starts. First thing I noticed immediately is Jalen Suggs was dribbling the ball a lot more than he was in game one early on, anyway. And it wasn't working out that well. Like we Jalen Suggs is not a point guard. We can't have Suggs dribbling as much as he was early on. Donovan Mitchell was awesome out of the gate yet again, and we were down 9-6 at the first timeout, and we were 0-5 on threes. So not the greatest start, not a disastrous start, but Paolo, who ended up finishing with 21 points on, I think 9 of 20 shooting, I think only 1 of 4 on threes, but I mean decent shooting overall. But he had 6 turnovers in this game, so he combined the 9 turnovers from game one. He's got 15 turnovers through the first 2 games. But Paolo hit 2 jumpers and tied the game up at 10-10. That's as close as we got in this game. We still have not had a lead in the series after 2 games, which, that can be demoralizing. I get that. But that's just how this series has gone so far. The Magic were noticeably trying to run and cut to the hole more to kind of counter what Cleveland was doing early on. And I thought it was working in stints. We were also getting a lot of offensive rebounds early, but that wouldn't sustain at all in the second half. Mitchell had 12 of Cleveland's first 16 points to open the game. So again, Mitchell was just, I mean, he had 23 for the game and he had half of those very early on in the game. And that's where Jalen got hurt was when Suggs, it looked like his leg and foot got caught up against like Mitchell's leg and hip. And he had just this ugly kind of left leg hyperextension combined with an ankle roll, which that was just not pretty to watch. As he was challenging that Mitchell shot. And yeah, Jalen had to get carried off the floor by Goga and a few other Magic players and staff. And yeah, the slow motion replay was not great. And honestly, you would have thought rightfully that he might be done for the playoffs at least and some bad stuff. But I don't know. What'd you think of the Suggs injury, Penny?
Yeah, I mean, it very much looked like a hyperextension that would at least keep him out for that game and the next game in a best case scenario. And with our injury history, probably likely a long term catastrophic thing. So when he was warming up to start the second half, I was shocked.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a bit. But yeah, I mean, we were down 16-13 when Markel and Joe Ingles came in. Not the greatest Mosley subs, IMO, because like you really can't have Joe out there if Mo Wagner isn't playing pick and roll with him. And we wouldn't see Mo again till the start of the second quarter, like game one. And then I need Anthony Black out there to defend Donovan Mitchell. Like, hell, even Caleb Houston would have been good too in this situation. Because even though Fultz, I thought, defended overall well in game one, he did not do that in game two. Like, Markel was noticeably even worse in game two than he was in game one. Like, game one, he's still moving the ball around. He's defending well, even if he's not hitting shots. Game two, he wasn't doing much anything right. And, that's why Markel didn't play the second half. But, yeah, I mean, other than Paolo, we looked pretty shaken after the Suggs injury, which honestly, that's kind of understandable. Like it just is. Suggs is kind of the heartbeat of our team. So we were down 30-18 after the first quarter. As I mentioned, Mo came in to start the second quarter. Wendell Carter Jr. was at power forward, and I thought the Magic recovered with a nice run. Like we were only down 28-33. Despite Mosley not staggering Franz or Paolo, like we had a full bench lineup out there and we actually chipped away a bit there. And then it looked like Mosley was just going to go 9-man rotation with Suggs out of the game at that time. I thought Ingles, like I said earlier, I mean, Ingles just always looks way better with Mo out there. And then Wendell Carter in this series, at least, definitely looks like our backup power forward moving along in this series. I don't know what's your thoughts on Wendell, having seen 2 games of him now?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, he's at least he's moderately willing to shoot the three and doing a little bit. We'll talk about potential lineup adjustments. I'm not really sure, but you talk about the all bench lineup, and you know, it looked like we would go nine man if Suggs wasn't available, and then we end up playing an 11 man rotation in the second half. But it's so tough to play all five, an entire bench lineup when Markell is not a willing shooter or capable shooter, and then Joe Ingles, who's a capable shooter, is not
Not hitting
really a
shots
willing shooter.
and not hitting
So,
shots either. Yeah.
and that too. So it's just there's so much effort to generate a contested mid-range shot, which, as everyone knows at this point, is, you know, basically the best case, best outcome for an NBA defense. So
Yeah, I think
tough.
Wendell was like one of one on threes in game one. And I'm just like, shoot the ball more, man. And then, game two, he shot it more and he was one of six on threes. He had 6 points and he was one of seven from the field. So not a good offensive showing from Wendell there. But, and then Mitchell again, just kind of distributed his way to pushing that Cavs lead to double digits. Franz then came in at shooting guard with Mo playing next to Paolo and Isaac. So we went pretty big at that point. With I think Cole was the point guard. So Okoro, he hit two threes and then had a fast break layup to put the Cavs up 46-31. That was like an early backbreaker, honestly, from what we were trying to do momentum wise. And then Cole was just killing us in a bad way on both ends. Just like defensively, he's getting picked apart. Offensively, he can't hit shots, but he also can't pass the ball. Like game one, there were noticeable stretches where he should have passed the ball to Paolo when he was relatively open and didn't. And then just game two, it was kind of just repeatable stuff where nothing Cole was doing was working. And then, yeah, somehow at that point in the somewhere later in the second quarter, we found out Suggs was listed as questionable return with a left knee strain, which for them to list him questionable, I'm like, oh shit, he's coming back and playing potentially. But yeah, I mean, with Suggs out, the Magic tried to stay big with either Mo or Wendell in there. Along with the rest of the starting five, or with Cole in there instead of Gary. But yeah, the Magic were down 58-44 at halftime after the refs gave Mitchell just this bullshit goaltend call in his favor, even though his shot missed the rim short by a foot. But yeah, I get it. Isaac should have let the ball fall, but I mean, it was like a foot short. I don't know, Penny. What do you think of that? Because I mean, instead of being down 12, you're down 14 at the break.
Yeah, I mean, I think again, you feel like there's in today's NBA, it used to be like get it to single digits and feel good about it. And now to me, the number's like 12. You feel good about it at 12. You feel a lot worse about it at 14, especially on, and it's basically a controversial play. But I just want to go back to the Cole Anthony thing that's so been
Yeah.
so frustrating. And, you know, there's more leniency in the regular season. But the biggest thing is his selfishness, which is usually a net positive for the Magic in the playoffs, is magnified because he's just holding the ball, waiting to try and create something on his own. He's not
Yeah.
the best creator. He doesn't have the biggest size to create for himself. So there's so many possessions where the clock's getting drained, where he's just sitting there pounding the rock and doing nothing. And you know you're going to end up with a forced shot at the end of it that, you know, frankly, we can't afford. And then the Suggs listed as questionable thing to me at that point, I still thought that was a little gamesmanship in the injury reporting. But again, I guess kudos not only to him, obviously we know he's a warrior, but at this point you have to start talking about the Arne Kander thing in the offseason and what kind of dividends that presumably paid this year with bringing guys along and keeping them banged up but on the floor.
Yeah. Cole for this game was 0 for 4. He was scoreless. He finished minus 13 on the floor. Only Ingles was worse at minus 14. Just not great from Cole. I mean, he even had that moment where he basically had like the James Ennis bubble reenactment where he had like a stand up shot rejected by Mobley at the rim. That was awkward in the second half, but yeah, at the half, the Magic are down 14. The Magic were 5 of 19 on threes. The Cavs 8 of 19. So, that's basically a majority of the difference right there. Magic 37.5% shooting from the field. Cavs 50%. Cavs made three more free throws than we did. So again, threes and free throws basically made up the deficit there. Franz had 17 points at the break. Franz would only score 1 point in the second half because of foul trouble, and he too would have six turnovers like Paolo. Franz is basically literally the only Magic player shooting threes as well. Decent, well, whatever. Like I think he's the only player shooting better than 35% on threes out of us, which, I mean, that just tells you how the series is going. Gary had 8 points at halftime. He finished with 14 points. Paolo only had six at the break. He would end up at 21, so he'd have a better second half. And then Mitchell was at 19 points at halftime. So Mitchell only had to score four more points the whole second half. And then, yeah, like you mentioned earlier, Suggs was out there shooting at halftime with just this big black left leg sleeve. He started the third period. Suggs didn't look comfortable for most of the second half, despite the effort he gave. Like, he still made some pretty good plays. He wasn't the problem there defensively. Like, offensively, I mean, he was 4-16 in game one. He was 2-5 in game two. 5-7 at the free throw line as well. So he had 9 points. I mean, Jalen, he's not really the problem. I mean, he even had like 6 boards and 5 assists and a steal there. I mean, he's not our biggest problem is Jalen. And at this point, I just hope that, you know, he's going to play, keep playing game three and game four. It looks like, unless something comes up, and I think he's going to take an MRI, get an MRI. So unless something comes up with the MRI, like, he's going to play game three and beyond. So, you know, we talk about how much him just being healthy last summer was such a big factor and had such a big role in him having such a good season, you know, this season. And if we can just make sure he's healthy enough to where he doesn't need like a major surgery by, you know, in the off season, like, he's only going to hopefully get even better with a healthy off season. But I mean, we need him for us to compete, especially if we're not playing Anthony Black. Like, we definitely need Suggs. And the only other perimeter defender that we've got out there is Gary Harris. And, you know, we give Gary a lot of shit, but Gary, even though he struggled game one, he couldn't hit a shot game one. Game two, he was actually 4-7 on threes, 5-10 from the field. You know, he had 14 points. He's played good defense as Gary. But yeah, I mean, second half, the Magic, we were down 67-49 at the first timeout in that third period. And it just wasn't good enough, I guess, help defense movement wise. And just the Cavs, they were doing all this extra passing and just great, great, great assisting, great passing that just causes problems. Yeah, I mean, you didn't feel good about us coming back at this point, right, Penny?
Not at all. And I mean, obviously, you can look at the results and go, well, the Magic are missing shots, but they're outside of a couple of, you know, uncontested threes, they're just not generating enough easy looks. And, you know, you can put that on the Cavs defense if you want to. You can put it on the Magic's personnel limitations, but to make up 18 points when you're not shooting the three ball great and they lock down the paint, you're relying on a lot of, you know, Paolo mid-range Magic, which the percentages, even if he hits 60% of those, you know, which is solid, more than solid, it's just such an uphill climb. You know, you really need your defense to create a little bit more easy early offense. And that just hasn't been happening enough to feel any sort of confidence to make these 18, 20 point comebacks in the second half.
Rebounding was again a problem for us, especially in this third period, it felt like. Then we had kind of multiple awful foul calls against Franz, which didn't help our cause as he hit heavy foul trouble. And then, you know, again, just Mitchell and Allen, they've been awesome these first two games. Like, you just got to show them respect. Like, those two have been awesome. Mitchell has been super amped up and pumped up in these games, and he's been the difference maker. And then you got Jared Allen just racking up these monstrous double-doubles. And then, look, Garland and Mobley, they've been fine. They haven't been the guys that killed us. Although in that third, Garland did have that stretch where he hit two threes, and then the Magic were down 80-65 entering the fourth quarter. Caleb Houston did start the fourth, so Caleb made his first appearance of the series starting the fourth quarter. He was out there with Mo, Franz, Joe, and Cole. But Caleb didn't even get a shot attempt up in that 2 minutes and 51 seconds he was out there. So he got the trillion zero thing on his box score. So no fault of his own. He just didn't get the ball. They just put him in the corner and he never got the ball. So, and then Garland had another 5-0 run on his own which put the Magic down 87-65. And it felt like game over, but at that point, and then it got weird this fourth quarter because a fan got ejected for saying something really, really bad to Franz, because Franz actually looked over at the fan, and Franz never looks over at fans and at the crowd like that. And I'm 95% certain that Cavs fan called him a Nazi. I'm pretty sure. Like, it's not definitive 100%, but based off of what I've seen from other folks and folks that actually were able to pick up the audio or see the fan mouth the word, that's likely what he said. Again, not acceptable to spew that shit. I kind of want a media person at shoot around on Wednesday or at practice on Wednesday to ask Franz to if what was said. But I mean, I respect it if he doesn't want to bring that up, because that's an awful thing to say. And then I don't know what you want to comment on this, Penny, or do I move on to the Mo incident?
I mean, you see it across the league with fans overstepping the line. And also, that being said, when you're in a tough spot in that, you know, fourth quarter where your team is down and on the brink, you'd like them to also not react to that kind of thing. But all, you know, everyone's human, and there's lines obviously that shouldn't be crossed. We don't know exactly what it was, but obviously enough to get the fan immediately booted from the arena. So I think that's all I have there.
I didn't find it a coincidence that we went on a run, because Mo had just the play of the night where he dribbled behind the back into the paint and posterized Jared Allen to cut the deficit to 71-87. We've seen Mo kind of do this before, but not this cleanly. That was nice. That was like only European players can do that, because they don't teach that in AAU ball, I don't think. So that was pretty cool. And then we got a 4-point play, and then Jalen Suggs got an and one, which saw the Magic only down 9 with 4:57 left. As then we had the incident where Mo dove for a ball and then kind of got tripped up and tipped over into the stands and accidentally took out a courtside fan in the process. The gentleman was immediately holding his shoulder. I thought he was having a heart attack for a split second, but it looked like he was holding like his collarbone or shoulder to the point where he's in so much pain that he laid down on the floor. Some folks are saying he milked it. That looked painful. Do you think he milked it? You think he was going for some perks? But yeah, I mean,
when's the last time you hurt your shoulder and laid down on your shoulder?
I don't know, man. It was a fairly older gentleman. Mo Wagner's a 7-foot, you know, mammoth of a guy. Like, depending on how he fell, like if he put all his weight into that guy's shoulder or collarbone, I mean, who knows? But you're right, he could have milked it, but I'm not accusing that. But it was interesting that he waved off the stretcher. Like, they got the stretcher out like it was a lengthy delay, and then they pulled the stretcher out and I guess he waved it off or something. And then I guess he and I don't know if that was his wife with him or what, went off the floor, but his wife kicked Mo in the process of that play. Yeah. There's that replay going around. So that's not great. I wonder if the league's going to look into any of that, for any repercussions there, but that delay in action kind of cut off our momentum right there, because Mitchell then essentially put the game away in this game too, just like he did in game one with clutch buckets there. And, you know, it went from like a 9-point game to 13 with those buckets. And, you know, the Cavs won 96-86. The Magic, I already mentioned, haven't had a single lead yet in this series. And there's just a lot of stuff to think and stew over with, you know, the flight home and us being back home now and having 2 full days off to rest, prep, and just think about what we got to do. But hopefully the Magic gets the same home cooking officiating back in Orlando for game 3 and 4 as the Cavs got these first 2 games of the series, because it was noticeable. Like, it didn't factor into us losing either game, but I would like some home cooking officiating for 3 and 4 to even things up. But Allen had a monster 16 point, 20 rebound, 2 steal, 2 block game. Mitchell, 23 points. The Magic shot 36% from the field, 26% from three, 9 of 35 from deep. So that obviously wasn't good enough. The Cavs, they shot 12 of 39 on threes, which that's kind of, that's a scary thing for game 3 and 4, is that Cleveland haven't had a scorching hot 15 or 20 made 3-pointer game yet. Now our defense gets credit for that, but Cleveland is capable of catching fire one of these games, and it hasn't quite happened yet. They've done it in spurts. Well, they'll go like 5 of 5, but they haven't done it for like a full game. Paolo already mentioned had 21 points, Franz 18, Gary 14, Mo 12. Mo has scored, I think he scored like 56% of our bench points these first two games. So not getting much help from the bench there. You know, I'm glad his minutes got bumped up from 13 to 20 minutes in this game too. Isaac didn't play the final 17 minutes of the game. J.I. only had 3 points on 1 of 7 3-point shooting. And so he just could not knock down a corner three. Like he's capable of hitting them. He just didn't hit them in this game. And then Fultz didn't play in the second half, apparently. And then Ingles only played 5 minutes and 35 seconds in the second half. You can't win a game when the Cavs won the battle with second chance points, fast break points, paint points, rebounds, turnovers, free throws, threes, steals. Just they won everything. That's why they won this game. Thoughts on this, Penny?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most shocking thing is the rebounding and the back-breaking offensive rebounds that the Cavs keep getting, because obviously that's a killer. Looking on the whole, you know, this game and the themes from both games, I think the guards are doing enough defensively. I mean, at the end of the day, Mitchell's the best player on the floor. You expect him to hit tough, contested superstar level shots. You expect Garland to hit some contested shots that kind of, you know, break your momentum and stuff, and then you gotta fill in the gaps around that. And as you mentioned, the Magic are getting essentially nothing from the bench except for Mo, and then the front court is really doing nothing of consequence either. So the bad thing is you can't just say, well, the Magic got to make their shots, because while they do have to make their shots, Cleveland is not shooting well across the board, including at the free throw line. So,
Cleveland is just as bad as us on free throws. I will say that. Cause I mean, going in, I mean, the Cavs were only like 0.6% free throw percentage shooting better than us coming in. So we're both not great free throw shooters.
Right. But, you know, we're looking at it where there really hasn't been an Okoro or a Niang or, you know, a Merrill or anyone else. Like, the catch and shoot threes really haven't been an issue to this point in two games, where you know, they're probably due for one where they get red hot and then that swings a game to the Cavs. So and you can obviously credit the Magic's defense, which as we know is a top two or three defense across the league, for making things more difficult there. But you know, it's more than the Magic just making shots that they're getting. There's got to be an adjustment that has to be made. And we'll see what happens and how much home court, you know. To me, I think you can't ask for much more than what Paolo's given you. I mean, you could ask for major Trae Young performance, but like, he's been solid. He's done his job. I think Franz has done his job in both games. You can't ask for much more than that. But everyone else outside of Mo has to pick it up, or we will find ourselves swept out of the playoffs, I think.
Yeah, look, from a free throw perspective, you know, the Magic were 19 to 26, Cavs were 16 to 26, so they missed three more than us. You're right, their bench guys haven't torched us. I mean, you got 2 of 4 on threes from Caris LeVert, you got 2 of 5 of threes from Okoro, so that's it. They had 18 points off the bench from those guys, because Niang didn't score, Sam Merrill didn't play in this one. I mean, they got Marcus Morris and Tristan Thompson sitting out too, without them seeing minutes yet. But the Magic bench, they only scored 19 bench points, did the Magic, and 19 against Cleveland's 18. And that's not good enough when we're dipping in the bench so much more than they are. Like, we got 6 from Wendell, 2 from Joe, 1 from Markel, nothing from Cole, 12 from Mo. I mean, we got nothing from Caleb, but that's not Caleb's fault. He didn't play enough. But yeah, I mean, it's not good enough from what we need from the bench. Cause I mean, our bench has been our strength for the majority of the season. And either you got to go to different bench guys like Goga, Black, Chuma. I mean, Jet Howard is an option, not an option for me, but he's an option to some Magic fans. And, you know, look, coming back home, playing at home, it's going to help hopefully with a lot of that, but you're right. There's stuff that we got to fix here. So, all right, going into game.
I've got a quick question.
Yeah.
Theoretical now. Mm-hmm. If you look strictly at the box score and you go, okay, if the Magic made 4 more threes, they win the game. And that's only shooting 37.5%. So call it league average from three. I don't know what league average was this year, but you know, that's a 12-point difference. We end up losing the game by 10. How much do you at this point, based on how the game is played in the NBA, I'm finding a lot of parallel in basically postseason baseball and postseason basketball now in a way that maybe there didn't used to be with the 3-point variance where you go like, okay, I'm the best baseball team in 162 game season. And then you run into a 7-game series where you're, you know, on a hot pitcher and a couple of hitting streaks and you get knocked out super quick in the same way last year where Miami was a play-in team that rode basically a 2-month heater all the way to the finals. Like,
yeah,
there's variance involved. One thing, the other thing is generating quality looks, which we need to obviously generate higher quality looks. But how much weight are you putting on just kind of the luck of the draw? Going back to that old cliche of make or miss league in this particular series so far.
I'm not putting much in that. Like, honestly, like JB Bickerstaff and his staff have been really good so far. Like, even like they really did their homework going into this where despite Paolo and Franz playing pretty well, like they've done a good job making their life hell and their lives hell. And yeah, I mean, honestly, it's better coaching prep by their staff. Like, us not having Nate Tibbetts or like an offensive coach is hurting us right now in this playoffs. And yeah, I don't like the make or miss league thing necessarily. Like, yeah, you can run in bad luck and yeah, we've had open looks, but a lot of that is like confidence. And a lot of it is, you know, they want us to shoot them. And in that kind of toxic, hectic Cleveland environment, just some of our guys, even as the ball is about to come out of their hands when they're shooting, you can tell immediately that it's not going in for some of those. So I don't know. Do you agree? Do you disagree?
Well, I mean, I agree. I think Paolo and Franz, every shot attempt that they get is manufactured with so much effort that, you know, the best you can hope for is a 50-50. And regardless of the hot streak and even the season-long Jalen Suggs shooting percentage, there's a different confidence level when, you know, a Garland puts up a three or even a Niang, for God's sake, as opposed to a corner three from J.I., who even he had a hot hand for a little bit in the season. It just 1-for-7 from three, 1-for-6 from three doesn't surprise me. And if you're Cleveland, that's how you're basically orienting your defense, is to wall off the paint and go, okay, if Isaac's going to beat us from beyond the 3-point line, then you tip your cap. So I think it's two things. It's you got to make what you get, but also the shots that you're getting are difficult and the easy ones are easy by design. So hopefully with an additional day off in between, there's a little bit more scheming and game planning that the Magic coaching staff can work through.
Yeah. I mean, we also just got to start winning 50-50 balls more. We got to rebound better. We got to attack the paint better. Like, that stuff you can do. Just got to do it. And like I said, being at home, that's going to help with some of that. So yeah, going into these, you know, games 3 and 4 here now, Thursday night and Saturday afternoon at 1, we have a Paul Porter public address announcer controversy potentially going into both these home games, because he might be calling Tampa Bay Lightning hockey games instead. Both teams host home games at exactly the same time Thursday night. at 7. And then Saturday, there's a chance Paul could call the Magic's game 4 at 1 p.m. and race back over to Tampa for their 5 p.m. game. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. He's got multiple rings with the Lightning. Yeah, he lives in Tampa and he drives over for our games, but I think we need him more than Tampa does. They should. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. You've got your rings with them already. Just come on, man. Yeah, just your Magic Hall of Fame induction is on the line potentially. but yeah, it's game four is going to be a crazy Saturday because Kia Center has the Magic at 1. Then they got to switch from the parquet floor to ice, because then the Solar Bears have their game 4 of their first round series at 9 p.m., they're saying. And then also down the street, you have Orlando City playing a match at 7:30 p.m. against Toronto, I believe. And we're going to miss all that for a bachelor party. So, but yeah, it's going to be a crazy time. All right, let's talk. I don't know. What do you think? You think Paul Porter's calling these games, or you think it's going to be Tampa?
I do think that we need him more than Tampa, but as a Magic fan that doesn't have that much of an interest in hockey, I also can't begrudge Paul Porter for wanting to potentially stay home and call the Lightning game instead. There's probably a higher potential of a victory, but the Magic games just aren't the same. I mean, they're similar, but they're just not the same without him. The backups are either emulating him to a fault or not bringing much to the table in terms of being the announcer and the public address announcer. So any advantage the Magic can get, and I think that Paul Porter has traditionally been an advantage, would be helpful, especially in these games where basically we have to hold serve or that's it.
All right, let's talk game 3. So any Magic fan that thinks the series is over, don't go over to the game, stay off social media. We don't need that energy, man. We need positivity and just support our guys, because we've been great at home this season and we can definitely hold serve here at home. You know, as far as adjustments, what do we want to see, Penny? Let's assume everyone is playing and Suggs' MRI is clean. I have 3 different starting lineup options for you. And these 3 lineups, it's not the one that we've started the first 2 games here. So first starting lineup, I have Goga, Isaac, Paolo, Franz, Suggs. Second lineup, I have Goga, Paolo, Franz, Suggs, Black. So I have Isaac coming off the bench and supporting the bench defensively, so that you give kind of Ingles and Mo just kind of relief there defensively, and GI can just kind of bring energy off the bench. And then the third lineup I have is Isaac, Paolo, Franz, Suggs, but instead of Gary Harris, it's Anthony Black. So any of those 3 interest you?
They're all interesting to me, but I also feel like, as we said before, the guards are doing a good job defensively, or a good enough job defensively. So it's hard to make a starting lineup change for me, because you're going to squeeze out Gary, basically, right?
Well, no, though, because my counterpoint is our starting guards defensively have been good. Our bench guards have not been good. So if you have Gary as your main bench guy coming off, then... Yeah. I think that covers holes, but you can continue your point.
It's just because you're thinking about, to me, I don't think there's a starting lineup change between game 2 and game 3.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing to me rotation wise is I think you put J.I. on a super short hook and you bring Wendell in earlier, and then try and bring J.I. back against, when Cleveland makes some subs, and see if there's a little bit more moving the needle with his energy and length in that role. Also, at this point, you frankly, despite the defensive limitations, now you got to play Mo more, because he's the only guy delivering back-to-back double-figure games off the bench. But then the other thing too, not starting lineup related, but you cannot play a single more minute in this series without Paolo or Franz on the floor, and it's malpractice that's been happening.
Yeah, look, I don't think Mosley can roll out the same 5, but maybe if he changes the rotation a lot, then maybe that'll be fine. But I would like
Ingles minutes at all in game 3.
He's on a short leash for me, I think, but because with Ingles, I'm still playing Ingles, but he can only play with Mo. Like, don't throw a Joe in there without Mo. And then if Joe is off to kind of like a bad stretch, 34 minute stretch, then I would look at Caleb then at that point.
I think you play Caleb instead of Markell. I think right off the bat, those 5-6 minutes that Markell's been getting, I think you got to roll the dice with Caleb and see if he can hit a couple threes.
So Fultz can't play the rest of the series, but from a rotation perspective, if you're not playing Goga or Black, then yeah, you throw Caleb Houston in. Like, but Markell, can we agree, can't play another minute the rest of the series?
Oh yeah, I mean, and he just can't. And what do you do about Cole? How long of a leash do you give him at home?
He needs to be on a short leash. Like if he's in there for 3-4 minutes and it's the same stuff we saw game one and two, he's got to come out. That's why I don't mind having Gary come off the bench then, because Gary could essentially cover those minutes. But
the problem is we're talking about 80% of our playable roster not being playable. So then you go like, okay, assuming you get 25 from Paolo and 18 from Franz, how do you get 50 more points from anyone else? Like, somebody's got to perform, you know? And if that, it's hard for me to think that you're going to get an ice cold Goga and AB to do it, but where else do you turn? Like, it's tough sledding here for rotation and decision-making, because you're not going to find an answer, because maybe there's no answer to be found.
Yeah, look, I want to see Goga start, man. I want to see him crash with Allen. I just want to see how that looks. If Goga loses his mind and gets ejected in anger, so be it. Maybe he'll take a Cav with him. I don't know. But like with Black, he's 6'6", man. He can guard Mitchell and Garland. He can guard most of the Cavs on the floor. Gary off the bench would stabilize things defensively for us. And then you wouldn't have to play Fultz, or you can have also Cole on a short leash. Mo's got to play 20 minutes now, the rest of the series. Like, he played 20 tonight, game two. He's got to play 20 again. Cole, the problem is none of this is going to happen. I feel like that's the scary part, is like Mosley needs to adjust. And I'm scared that he's not going to do that. Which, hey man, this is going to be a heavy lesson for him for his first playoff series one way or another. But, yeah, I mean, I obviously agree with you. Like, he has to have one of Paolo or Franz on the floor at all times. It won't happen. And this is my most controversial take, but I wouldn't play Wendell in game three. I just want to see what it looks like if your bigs are only Goga, Mo, and Isaac. Like, what does that look like? But that's not going to happen. But Wendell can't be on the floor against a Mobley or an Allen. Like, he just can't. Like, he's getting his ass kicked by both those guys. That's my controversial take, is Wendell shouldn't see the floor. But
I feel like he should see more of the floor in game three. So that's interesting.
Because he's getting pushed around, man, so much. And I get it. Like, he sets great screens, and that's a very underrated thing. But, like, it's just not enough, I don't think. I'm with you. Like, Caleb, I think, deserves run. It's just how does he get it? Is it because you're sitting Joe and Fultz and Cole? I don't know. But it's a lot for the coaching staff to think about. I already mentioned we're going to be on a bachelor party for game three and four. So we're going to be out of town. I'm thinking from a pod perspective, Penny, no matter what, like, we may not do another pod until Sunday. So whether we win or lose game three, we may or may not do one. We'll see how it plays out. I mean, obviously if we win game three, maybe we'll be more motivated to do one, but, we'll see how that goes. But yeah, any thoughts with these home games now, and any other stuff you want to talk about from an adjustment perspective?
I mean, just very briefly, I think it's time for Magic fans to take a pause again between this episode and the next. We can conceivably have a series that's tied up at 2-2. And what a luxury in all our lives that there's enough going right that we have the time and attention and energy to pay attention to the results of a basketball game. So take a collective deep breath there. But my bold prediction is that at some point in the first quarter in game three, the Magic will have a lead of at least 1 point.
Take any lead at this point, man. So yeah, that works for me. Look, I mean it genuinely, that what we're going through is just a bonus from us finishing fifth in the regular season. And one way or another, we were going to find out what stuff we're going to need in the offseason, whether we win this series or not. We kind of already know what this team's going to need, but support them, man. Support the hell out of them, because this is the best Magic team we've had in a decade. So Yeah, just, I mean, well, over a dozen years, really, is the best Magic team. So just support the hell out of them. This is our first home playoff game since 2019. It's been 5 years since we've had, home playoff games. We got to bring the energy like Cleveland did, man, because the Cavs, those fans, they were rabid. They brought the energy. We got to do the same thing for our guys. And if we bring that, and if our guys make adjustments and just bring the effort like we know they can, I think it's going to be 2-2 when we talk pod wise by on Sunday anyway. So yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that. So that's going to do it for this episode. If you're still listening, we thank you very much for your time. We are the longest running Magic podcast show in existence, so any added support is much appreciated. Subscribing, rating the show highly, positive comments, they all help this podcast ranking immensely. Tweet us any of your questions and feedback. Penny, what's your Twitter handle?
At Spencer Strode.
No C's, just S's. And I'm at Papa Giorgio MBO. And with that, take care. Let's go, Magic.